Welcome to Side Podcast episode 56, Formula One management finally giving the people what they want. Coming up on today's show, all about qualifying in Australia, all about the race and all about the Side Podcast lead.
I'm confused.
Why?
It's Saturday. Why are we recording a podcast on a Saturday?
Well, this podcast is a little bit different. It's kind of like a podcast of two halves. We're recording this on a Saturday. We've just watched qualifying, so we haven't seen the race yet. We want to discuss qualifying and the news of the week and maybe make some predictions about the race tomorrow.
And then we're going to come back tomorrow and look at the race and put them both together into one podcast.
It's going to be all bundled together in one happy show.
This is never going to work.
Good week, bad week.
It's been a good week for Super Aguri as they have actually arrived in Melbourne.
Hallelujah.
They've been saved by British company Magma Group, although details of the deal are a bit sketchy at the moment. Nick Fry of Honda said they have got to be a full-blown do-everything-themselves constructor from 2010, but they will be doing most of it in 2009 as well, so it will effectively be a pull-ahead of 1 year compared to the previous plan. So it sounds to me like Honda is saying, we don't want anything to do with you anymore.
Yeah, and rumours are name change abound and livery change coming soon.
It's been a bad week for Lewis Hamilton as Flavio Briatore has been knocking him, saying he wasn't a team player in 2007 and his feud with Alonso cost McLaren the championship. To be fair though, it wasn't just Hamilton's feud, I think they both had their fair share of the blame.
It sounds like Alonso's still a little bit delicate, Flavio's trying to massage his ego a little bit.
It's been a good week for Toro Rosso as they are expecting to debut their 2008 car in Turkey, with it turning up to the Barcelona test next month as well. The team are confident that next year they'll have the new car right from the start of the season. Top bod Giorgio Ascanelli blamed himself, saying he arrived too late to sort things out for the new car. Of next year, he said, "Now I know what our strengths and weaknesses are, I can put in place a strategy that will give us the new car by Melbourne next year."
He better do, because he ain't going to be able to start next season with the car he's going to get in a couple of months. The regulations are changing way too much for that thing to start.
It's been a bad week for Red Bull drivers. Webber came out this week and said that he and Coulthard were feeling the effects of the extra testing miles over the winter. He said, "Red Bull chose not to use any test drivers this year. David and I did all the work ourselves. It's probably the most intense off-season in terms of doing mileage that I've ever had. David and I got through it in the end, but we had a few physical niggles towards the end because you were just doing so many miles."
News and views.
All good F1 news bulletins really should start with how Jarno Trulli is feeling this week.
And do inform me, what's the news?
Well, it's actually quite hard to tell because he was feeling good during the week. He said that Toyota can challenge for third in the Constructors' Championship, but he did spin off in free practice too, so that's probably a bit of a downer.
So, fair to middling then.
It won't surprise you that the Australian Grand Prix has been in the news this week, but not for good reasons.
What's up with it this time?
It's quite an epic story, actually, starting with Bernie issuing an ultimatum saying night race or no race.
Ooh.
Albert Park officials said a night race was not an option, but they did offer a 5 p.m. start time compromise, but only if they saw increased ratings from the delayed start this year.
So this year, the race is starting 90 minutes later, and then next year they're suggesting it will be a further 90 minutes later.
That's what they suggested, but Bernie said no. He said it needs to be a night race, and of the 5 p.m. compromise, he said it doesn't help a lot. That's not really what we're looking for. So things were looking quite bleak for Albert Park, and then Sydney came along and said, "We'll have a night race."
These two actually have a bit of history, don't they? A few arguments in the past, and maybe Bernie's trying to play them off against each other.
New South Wales Premier Maurice Iema said, "It's not a blank check, but it could be held at a place like Eastern Creek, obviously with modifications. If Formula One is looking for a night race, then Eastern Creek can be converted to suit them."
Well, Eastern Creek has held A1GP races there in the past. I have no idea how much work would be required to bring it up to Formula One spec, presumably not too much.
It seems like they're willing to do anything anyway. Some of the drivers have defended Albert Park, though. They want the GP to remain there. Fisichella said, "I really like this country. There's a fantastic atmosphere around the town." Webber said, "It's a safe city as well, which is useful because not all the cities we go to are safe, so we can relax and enjoy it." And Kovalainen said, "For me, it's great. Coming from Finland, I get a bit of a suntan over here. I don't mind where they start the season, but this is a great country, and I hope we keep the race in Australia."
Well, keeping the race in Australia, that actually fits within Sydney's remit, and Melbourne's now Adelaide. So I think I'd rather see an Australian Grand Prix somewhere rather than no Australian Grand Prix at all.
Patrick Head said that if he was the organiser of a GP, he wouldn't back down to Bernie's pressure for a night race. He said, "I'd be saying, well, we're putting up all this money, why don't we have a Grand Prix at a time that suits us?"
He also said, "Why don't we try reversing a Formula One grid?"
Okay, so we take some things he says with a pinch of salt. Talking to the BBC, he said, "I would like to see the grids in reverse order of championship position. It's the same for everybody, and over a whole season, the right guy would still win the championship. If you allow the guys to do all this practice and testing, and then you line them up with the fastest at the front and the slowest at the back, why should there be any overtaking?"
Well, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. We got an email about it, didn't we? It was a suggestion from
Blake.
And he said exactly the same thing. So maybe Patrick's listened to this show. However,
Patrick continues, "What's really boring is if there's a car that is genuinely faster sitting on the tail of the car in front and his race is destroyed. We've had some races at Monaco where people have been held up for 30 or 40 laps when they've been a second or two faster than the car in front."
Let me think about that for a second.
Well, that's exactly what would happen. He's just argued against his own proposition.
He's painted himself into a corner, isn't he?
Yeah.
Because if you reverse the grid at Monaco, the guy who's at the front, which is the slowest car, he's going to hold everybody up and it really is going to be a procession.
You'll get Raikkonen stuck behind Button. Yep. Nothing will happen.
Same thing at Valencia. Same thing at Singapore. It's going to be hopeless. That's never going to work.
Sean from Sean's Best Info blog said, "F1 is a thoroughbred sport. It's ruthless. It's a motorsport that, through its survival of the fittest attitude, has produced the fastest cars on earth driven by the best drivers."
Sean is right, but I would say that the survival of the fittest attitude has got us into this situation where there just is no overtaking anymore.
Yeah, but if you fiddle around with the format too much, then you're kind of detracting from its pinnacle of motorsport status.
It turns into a bit of a joke.
Pedro de la Rosa has been voted the new chairman of the Grand Prix Drivers Association. He takes Ralph's place and was unanimously voted in after being suggested by current directors Weber and Alonso. Alex from SaferF1.com points out that it's interesting that the directors under him will be Alonso and Weber. All three are huge Alonso fans. And none of them have much time for Lewis or Kimi, neither of whom are members of the GPDA. De La Rosa said his main aim would be to encourage younger drivers like Hamilton to get involved. But Lewis has said, "If you are part of an important organisation, you have to be committed. And I really don't have time for that at the moment."
Presumably that was one of the reasons for choosing De La Rosa, and that he doesn't really have much to do on a race weekend.
He's not a race driver, though. It's the Grand Prix Drivers Association.
Well, he used to be. He has a certain amount of experience at that level. Interesting choice, but I guess we'll have to wait and see what he achieves.
Qualifying.
I hope everyone has listened to my F1 Digest shows, because we're not going to go into the details here.
No, I like this idea, because last year, obviously, we went through it lap by lap, qualifying in all the minute detail, and people who'd watched qualifying didn't need to know the information, but people who hadn't watched qualifying could do with the information. They knew what we were talking about. Now, with F1 Digest, you have the option of always being up to date first with the latest information. Then you get to listen to our opinions on it.
One of the most important things of the race weekend so far, for us in the UK especially, is that ITV are now showing the feed online.
Formula One management finally giving the people what they want.
So whereas before, watching free practice meant looking at the numbers.
Yes, Formula One's official live timing, which looked like a fruit machine, just a load of colours slowly moving up and down the screen.
Now we've got the world feed on the internet.
Oh yes, it was a bit ropey at first, wasn't it? Wasn't the best experience in the world.
I don't think ITV were prepared. It was quite a rushed thing, I think.
Very last minute thing, and maybe not enough capability and capacity. But it got better as the weekend went on.
It's a bit of a shame that it's only available in the UK.
Yes, I don't know why the rest of the world has so far been excluded. It should really be on F1.com, shouldn't it? That's where its natural home is, next to live timing, another window, Formula One for everybody.
Not that much happened in free practice.
Green track, cars flying off all over the place, but no major incidents to report.
So we'll just go on and talk about qualifying, which was a bit more exciting.
Oh yeah, what did you like about qualifying?
Well, I have two questions.
Okay.
One, Weber.
Yes.
Where's the reliability?
Pretty much the same as last year.
Okay. Two.
Yes.
Kimi.
Yes.
Where's the reliability?
Pretty much the same as last year.
Raikkonen's breakdown really was the big news of qualifying.
Everybody expected him to be at the front going into this. Nobody questioned Ferrari's reliability. And what a shock.
Every single prediction voicemail that we had Raikkonen in the top three somewhere.
Somewhere.
Both predictions that we made, Raikkonen's there.
Raikkonen all the way.
Mm-hmm.
And he's out. He's gone. He's right at the back.
He could make up some places.
It's going to be a hell of a race. He's going to have to do an awful lot, isn't he? He's done it in the past. He's done it before. It can happen. This track, certainly, he's got a bit of a chance. But goodness, he's up against it.
The Ferrari didn't actually look as fast as I thought it was going to be anyway.
Didn't destroy the field as we expected it to.
They do still have Massa in fourth.
Yeah, but he wasn't quick over a single lap. How did he end up back there? He's going to have a lot of work to do himself.
The other surprise in qualifying was the BMW boys.
Yeah, where did they draw that pace from?
Kubica in second, and he would have been pole if he hadn't made that small mistake.
So close. I'm really impressed. I was really pleased to see him in the press conference, actually. It was really nice to see his face and hear what he had to say. Although, talking of which, slightly peculiar comment about his engine braking this year. He thinks BMW have an advantage.
He said, but what is strange is that I found much better braking stability without the engine braking system, which means that I think we missed something last year with this system.
Level in the field, new regulations, liking it. And the cars all over the place in qualifying. Teo happy.
I don't think I've ever seen quite so many cars flying off the road.
Made good use of that painted gravel, didn't they? Lots of pretty colours.
When they rescued Weber's car, you could see the gravel was all disturbed from all the previous excursions.
I do have to say, though, despite how good the racing was, slightly shocked at the look of Honda's attire.
We have had quite a few comments about the green
shorts. My God. It's not just green, though, is it? It's not like a dark green. It's not British racing green, is it? It's luminous freaking green.
The blue and orange line said, Honda staff look like elves.
They really do. It's quite embarrassing.
Brendan said he didn't think Braun could possibly be in charge if he was allowing those colour shorts to be worn. But then Braun did say that he thought they looked good on the television.
I heard he was told they looked good on the television.
Someone was telling him lies, I think.
He's surrounded by too many yes men, clearly.
My loser of the day.
You have a loser of the day? Is that like driver of the day, but less impressive?
Yeah.
Right.
It was Piquet.
Well, yeah, he didn't do very well, did he?
He was really bad.
Worse than Kovalainen last year?
I think so.
Pretty hopeless as a debut. How come Renault find it so difficult to properly prepare their rookie drivers for an upcoming race season?
There must be something wrong, because once is a fluke, but twice.
It's way too much of a coincidence, isn't it?
I think what makes it worse is that Piquet was so confident beforehand.
He was, wasn't he? The bigger they are.
Ed Gorman said on the Times Online blog that Nelson looked really shocked at the Friday press conference. He said, you sensed the shock to his system that making his debut in Formula One had caused, and his feeling of embarrassment about making a big mistake so publicly.
And that was on Friday. Imagine how he felt after his qualifying performance on Saturday. He must be gutted.
It probably helps a little bit to know that almost everyone was off the track at some point or another.
Yeah, truly embarrassed himself, as did Suter. I thought Bourdais did a pretty good job as a rookie, though.
Yeah, it must be really hard being a rookie this year because your yardstick is Lewis Hamilton.
That's not a completely fair comparison, though, because obviously he was groomed by McLaren for years and years and years with their massive technology centre and all the investment they put into him.
Yeah, but people are still going to compare rookies to Lewis Hamilton. He was good.
He was good. He was absolutely fantastic. There was no question that was the best introduction to Formula One of any driver at any time in the past. But unless teams have time to do exactly the same thing as McLaren did to Hamilton, that's not going to happen again. And I'm sure they're all now looking at drivers a lot earlier than they had in the past. But that's going to take a long time to filter through. In the meantime, you've got rookies diving into the sport with very little experience and very little preparation.
How much more preparation do you need than your dad being in the sport?
A good point.
I think that covers all the important stuff from qualifying.
It certainly does.
Let me put you on the spot. What's going to happen in the race?
Well, the start is going to be crazy. No traction control. Drivers are going to be taking a leap into the unknown. They're going to be all over the place. It's going to be mental. First corner, blimey, it's going to be carnage. I expect the front runners are going to benefit the most from that madness.
I think Hamilton is just going to walk it.
A flag-to-flag victory?
Yep.
In that case, you think he's going to win it?
Absolutely.
And second?
Kubica.
Third?
Probably Massa.
Do you know what? I'd almost agree, except I think it's going to be Massa and Heidfeld second and third.
What's going to happen to Kubica?
Unreliability. Or, I'll tell you what, he's light. That's the thing. He's really, really light. I think Heidfeld's got a good strategy, but I think Kubica expected to be on pole, and I believe his strategy is built around that, and because he's not, he's going to be compromised.
But the guys in the BMW garage looked pretty happy when he was in second.
Yeah, that's
true. They almost looked surprised.
Yeah, but he did lose a little bit of time on that lap, and they must have expected him to be on pole with that performance.
We're going to take a short break now, but join us in a minute when we'll be back tomorrow.
I'm confused.
Yeah.
It was going so well.
I know.
What's happening now? We're going to go to an advert break.
Yep.
But we're done here for today.
Yes, we'll be back tomorrow.
But the podcast is going to continue.
The podcast hasn't finished.
Right. I'm a bit confused.
I know you are.
Are you sure this is going to work?
We talked about this already, though.
Are you sure?
At the start of the
show. I've got reservations.
No, it's fine.
Oh, I'm...
If you don't have the time to trawl through website after website looking for Formula One news, let F1 Minute do the hard work for you. Delivered to your ears every weekday, F1 Minute is 60 seconds of headlines keeping you up to date with drivers, teams, rules, regulations, testing, races, launches, results, quotes, anything you can think of. Visit f1minute.com for all the details and to find the latest show.
The race.
Hello, and we're back. Day two of the Formula One weekend. Does it make sense now?
Same show.
Yep.
Different day.
Yep. We've just watched the race.
Okay. Yeah, I'm with it now. I'm with it. It makes a whole lot of sense.
What a race to start with.
Good grief. That was amazing. I really enjoyed every single minute of that. It wasn't dull at all, was it?
I didn't enjoy every single minute. I was really liking it up until Bourdais.
Yeah, I give you that.
It was like 3 laps from the end. I was just like, oh, gutted.
Yes.
Then okay. I was just upset after that.
Fair enough. But I did. I just thought it was intense from beginning to end. Unbelievable.
Yesterday, or 2 minutes ago on the podcast, we made our predictions following qualifying.
And were we right?
No.
Not even close. How could you be, though, really?
I think we were both right on the Hamilton front, but yes. You know, that was quite obvious.
Yes, that was a given.
I said Kubica would finish, which he didn't.
Nope.
But you were quite right with Heidfeld.
Well, I thought Kubica was light, which he was, but you can always rely on Heidfeld to bring the car home.
We both said Massa.
Yeah. He's really let himself down, hasn't he?
It was embarrassing.
Twice. First incident, the worst.
There was mayhem behind him, cars crashing into each other, but he managed to spin all by himself.
Yeah, that was really embarrassing. He's not got used to these new regulations at all, has he? He didn't help his cause later on in the race when he smacked into the side of Coulthard either, did he?
That was a weird incident. I'm wondering whether Coulthard couldn't see him because of the higher cockpit sides.
Ooh, you could be onto something there. Although Coulthard would have used that as an excuse if he could have. But mind you, he did suggest the higher cockpit sides, so maybe he was keeping a bit quiet.
That's true.
Yeah.
Anyway, back to Ferrari. It wasn't just Massa being useless.
It was Kimi.
Did you see him?
Not acting like the world champion we think he is.
Kept making mistakes all over the place. It was awful.
He got duped, didn't he, by Kovalainen? Something chronic.
He did have a good start. They made up a lot of places.
He did, but he started on the soft tyres. Ferrari started both of their drivers, in fact, on the softer tyre. I think it gave him a big advantage at the beginning. Also, Glock, he was on soft, and Sutil in the pits.
The harder tyres were the better ones to be on, though.
Over longer stints, yes, but presumably they took a little bit longer to warm up, and that's where Kimi made the advantages. I think that Sutil probably started on the softer tyre in the hope that there would be a safety car on the first lap, and then he could get rid of them for the rest of the race, a bit like Liuzzi did last year.
There was a safety car in the first lap, though, so Massa could have done that.
Yes.
Because he pitted at least twice in the first few laps.
But Ferrari chose to keep him on the softer tyres, so their car must be super light on those tyres.
Someone else who was super light on their tyres, Glock, flying through the air.
That's cheesy. Yeah. I see what you did there. Nice segue.
Quite an accident that was.
Where did that bump come from?
Well, it's a street circuit, so it's some kind of road. Bumpy.
It should have been flattened, though. There's no reason to have that on a Formula One course. Somebody who did the track inspection at the beginning of the weekend, that shouldn't have been overlooked. Massive accident.
He's all right, though.
He left the track with his arm in a sling. He says he's going to be fine, but Formula One drivers, they tend to be quite optimistic when it comes to injuries like this.
So who's Toyota's test driver?
Frank. Oh, no. It's not Montagne, is it?
If Kobayashi gets a turn, I'm going to be so angry.
Oh, he won't. He won't. It's fine. Glock's going to be fine. He'll be back next race. It's never going to happen. Don't worry. Don't worry about it.
Moving on then.
Barrichello.
Yeah. Oh, what was that about?
Not a great race
for
him.
The worst day ever.
Not as bad as Button, who didn't even get started.
Yeah.
But bit of a hash of the whole pit stop business.
Again, curse of the lollipop man.
Yes, at that team. Not the first time.
Do we think he was distracted by the chaos behind him and that's why he went through the red light?
Probably he was looking back as he exited the pit lane. But the thing is, the strategy was wrong. It was too risky. They should have brought him in earlier. They left it too late. He was going to run out of fuel. And the blame really should lie with the guys on the pit wall.
That'd be Braun then. Do you remember last year when Kovalainen was awful and yes. Flavio was horrible to him?
Yeah, what did you say?
Something about his brother driving and it wasn't really the real Kovalainen.
Yes, wasn't the person they knew and loved driving that car.
Well, PK, kind of awful.
All weekend.
Flavio's being nice about him.
What did he have to say?
He said, as far as Nelson goes, this was his first race and a difficult one for him, but I am sure this has been a learning experience for him and I'm confident that in the races to come he will do better.
So not rubbish this year then?
So what does that mean? That Flavio's had a personality transplant? Or he just likes PK better?
It might be the case. Maybe he was expecting Kovalainen to do well last year. And this year, he was expecting Piquet to be completely and utterly hopeless, so therefore wasn't at all surprised by the whole situation. Question is, what's he going to do about it? Because it's going to take Piquet months to get up to speed at this rate.
I think probably the worst thing, aside from the fact that he didn't do very well, is it's going to have knocked his confidence.
You know what else I don't have any confidence in?
What's that?
The Ferrari engine.
Oh my God, yeah.
6 of them started the race. Not one of them saw the checkered flag.
They might not all have been engine problems.
I bet if those cars had lasted, they would have been. Do you think they might be having issues with the biofuel?
It could be, but wouldn't we have seen that in testing or practice?
Yeah, possibly. What else was different at this race?
It was quite hot.
It was. Is it an installation issue or cooling issue then?
I guess we'll just have to wait and see, because Malaysia will be hot as well.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I thought I understood the engine change business.
Yes.
I really don't. It's so confusing.
I read your blog entry about the Excel chart you've got.
Yeah, I thought that was going to be perfect.
And did it help?
Not really.
Right. Partly because lots and lots of cars didn't finish makes it a little bit more confusing.
Yeah.
But
That's the bit of the rule that confuses me.
Which bit?
If a driver doesn't finish the race, he gets a free engine anyway.
If the FIA determined that it wasn't the driver or the team's fault.
Well, it seems to me that if you're having long life components, they need to last.
Yes. It's extra confusing this week because of Sutil.
Because he changed his engine before he'd even started.
Yes, and he didn't finish the race. Therefore, he's used two engines during this weekend. He's due a third one for Malaysia, and it's just the first race of the season.
But no penalties.
No, he got a penalty. That's the worst thing. Even though he's at the back of the grid, even though he wasn't going to lose any places, he still now lost his free engine for the year. Terrible business.
Okay, so let's assume that I understand that. The gearbox thing, it's just the same.
Well, Glock had that penalty. They put him back 5 places on the grid. So yeah. He's on his second gearbox of the weekend.
But he didn't finish the race.
So he can have a new one for next weekend.
With no penalty.
Yes. And the same with all the cars that didn't finish. They all get new gearboxes and new engines, which is quite a lot of cars.
This is absolute madness. I thought having to design a spreadsheet in the first place meant it was too complicated, but my spreadsheet doesn't even work. I don't understand it.
Yeah, these rules are just not working. This is no fun at all.
I thought I was being a bit harsh on Nakajima because he was forever going to be known to me as the guy that knocked people over on his first race.
Yeah, after the Brazil incident.
But this race, still useless.
More crashing. He was quick, but slightly dodgy on the road.
He's had a penalty for crashing into Kubica.
Yes, 10 places for the next race.
Not a good start for him.
I think he's modelled himself on Sato's career.
I don't know why Frank Williams put so much faith in him.
He needed an engine.
Frank is right to put his faith in Nico, though. First podium.
He did a really good job, then he had a very good race. Although, podium etiquette left a lot to be desired.
Yeah, he did leave his hat on during the national anthem.
Yeah, he should know better than that. Although, it's first time. Yeah. Can forgive him.
I'm wondering whether the champagne is pre-shook up, because they just pick it up and explodes everywhere.
They might well do that, for effect.
It does mean Williams are second in the constructors, though.
Who would have thought that? That's a very impressive start to their season.
Having said that, only 6 constructors picked up points.
Yeah, very high attrition rate in this race, but still, second place, not to be sniffed at.
Hamilton obviously won the race. We had a comment from Steve in the UK. BBC just said that 75% of the drivers who win here go on to win the championship. Should we give Lewis the title now then?
I actually thought it was 70%, so I'm not sure where the BBC got their figures from. But who is going to challenge Hamilton this year? Ferrari are all over the place. Are they really going to be able to mount a serious challenge? Kovalainen didn't have the pace.
He hit the wrong button.
And he hit the wrong button at the wrong time. He wasn't under pressure, just a bit of a mistake. But he still never looked at any point during the weekend like he was going to take the challenge to Hamilton. So yeah, possibly it might be about time to give him the trophy.
Still early days though.
Yeah, we're not going to be negative, we're not going to be down. It's a great championship, it was a brilliant race. So much fun to watch.
Who's your driver of the day?
Well, the only driver we haven't talked about, other than you mentioned him at the beginning, was Sebastian Bourdais, who I thought did a brilliant job all day. Really, really good. Came from a long way back. And aside from the slight issue with the Ferrari power plant, I think he had a brilliant afternoon.
Gerhard Berger agrees with you. He said he made no mistakes, reading the race in the right way from beginning to end.
How did he do that in his first Formula One race, really? I mean, Champ Car is supposed to be a lesser formula than Formula One. Formula One drivers are supposed to be the pinnacle of motorsport and the best in the world, yet here he comes from a supposedly lesser championship and shows a lot of people how it should be done.
Well, I'm a fan, although he's not quite French enough for me.
You do like that accent.
He's got a bit of the American accent creeping in. So.
He's been over there for too long. Although you could do a lot worse than supporting Bourdais, because he's one of those elite group of drivers who scored points on their debut. He's a 57th driver to do that, the last being Vettel at the American Grand Prix.
Oh, you just know that off the top of your head.
I've got some stats.
Yeah.
Done some research, you see. Okay. Read up on it. So you could pick, you know, I think you should support the guy. I think he should be your new Montagne. He's French and he's good.
Feedback. Now it's time for our very first Fantasy Races update.
Yay!
We're not reading the names out anymore because people aren't taking it seriously.
What's happened now?
Who calls their team rubber baby buggy bumpers? Who calls their team rubber baby buggy bumpers?
Someone trying to wind you up.
Almost as if they're doing it on purpose.
I think they are doing it on purpose.
Yeah, they are actually. Joel Gray said, thanks for the info on the Fantasy League in the most recent podcast. I've joined the fun and selected a team name to challenge the enunciation of longitudinal whatever. Yeah. Let's see how well you can say it on the podcast.
I'm not even going to try.
I said it fine. Also, someone picked the name Latitudinal Inertia, which I think is hilarious because if you'd picked that name, you'd be able to pronounce your own team.
Yeah, Latitudinal Inertia.
Well, maybe not.
Latitudinal, I've got issues.
After I blogged about the different countries our teams were coming from.
This is where America and Canada stood above the rest.
Yes, we had a few new entries, India and Kuwait.
Ooh.
Very cool, keep it up.
So, the race has been run and the numbers are in. What are the results?
I don't know. I don't think they've updated it yet.
Oh, they haven't? I thought when I checked earlier that they definitely had.
Well, I don't think they have.
I'm pretty sure when I looked, the numbers were definitely there.
Fine. I'm 102nd.
101 people are in front of you.
Yes.
I'm 50th.
Whatever.
I'm in front of you.
I don't care.
Yeah.
Shall I tell you who's in front of both of us?
Go on.
Must Beat Side Podcast.
That's not funny. They really have.
You are ahead of Latitudinal Inertia, though, if that makes you feel any better.
It does a little bit. Where are the buggy bumpers?
They're right near the top, like fourth or something. So it turns out I'm just behind the team called the No Hopers.
Last of the No Hopers, then.
Yeah, all right. And Dan Cross, who set up the league,
yeah.
He's in 98th.
Whoa, that's not good news. Who's in front of me?
V8 is just in front of you.
That's pretty good.
Yep, and you are just in front of Laminar Flow, which is Don's team.
Wow, small world.
So after each race, we're going to try and give you an update of the top five movers and shakers in the world of fantasy races. The Australia results are in, and in fifth place, Luminux ES with 504 points. Joint third are three teams on 524 points, Canuck F1, Deeg Racing and Buggy Bumpers. And in first place, Bergie's team with 619 points.
We'll also try and keep our eye on anything interesting happening farther down the field as the weeks progress, not just the top five.
It's not just about being the best, you know.
No, sometimes it's about being the worst.
Just before we started recording the show, I had an email from Daniel Galloway, and he'd created a spreadsheet which basically told you which driver was the best to have. So basically what the spreadsheet does is divide the number of points a driver got by how much he cost to purchase.
I see.
And Daniel's worked out that Nico Rosberg is the most efficient driver.
That makes sense based on the results of one race. Presumably, you'll be able to keep that up for the rest of the season.
I'm going to keep my eye on it because Bourdais is the second most efficient.
Ooh, your new favourite.
Yeah. We've had lots of good stuff posted on the Facebook group. Andrew Pegg has added a video of Australia and Peter Mills has posted some pictures.
I'm interested in seeing what happens to that video because obviously Bernie takes them off of YouTube. I wonder if he knows about Facebook and whether or not videos from the Australian Grand Prix will stay there. Keep your eye on the group and see if the video disappears.
That's really encouraging people to post things on the group.
I'm sorry.
Thanks for that. Jonathan Goodbun posted a video of when he was interviewed on BBC Breakfast in the Silverstone campsite last year. How cool is that?
That's very cool. And if you've got any Formula One videos that we should be seeing and we need to look at, do post them on the Facebook group. Just search for the name Sly Podcast.
We've posted a discussion over there because basically we want a new subtitle.
We do. We need one because at the moment it says Sly Podcast, your weekly F1 fix, and we're more than weekly now.
Feels like we're posting shows every 5 minutes.
Basically daily, but not every day. So you can have a daily podcast fix because it's not every day.
So we're after suggestions. Luke McCarthy Reed posted a couple of good ones. The perfect formula throughout the week. I quite like that. And always in your oral slipstream.
Ooh.
Very apt. Then he posted a special one, which is my personal favourite. Listen to us because James Allen is bloody useless. I'm not sure we can use that, but it's perfect.
I love it. If you have any more suggestions, because we are really looking for something we can use rather than something that might get us into trouble, do let us know on the Facebook group or they can email you at
christine@sidepodcast.com.
Look forward to hearing them.
I have had a couple of emails this week. Peter Restaino said, do you think if McLaren genuinely finished last and not in some controversial whirlwind last year, they would have had the same result in moving up the pit wall?
No.
I've got to say, I didn't actually notice that they weren't at the end.
I didn't. Actually,
I didn't really notice where they were at all. So
they didn't make a huge deal about it on the TV.
No.
The only thing is, my guess is that Bernie wasn't happy with the result and he's not happy with Max and therefore he's doing anything within his power to upset the guy, and moving McLaren up the pit lane, that's just going to help his cause.
I also had an email from Michael, who was at the Australian Grand Prix. He sent us a couple of exclusive pictures. The first one is of Alonso outside his hotel.
Which we can put on the Enhanced podcast if you're looking at it now.
Yep, he's looking a bit stressed, perhaps a bit tired.
This is after free practice on Friday.
I think so.
Yep.
And then we've got one of Alonso being a little bit chummy with Hamilton.
And what's going on there?
They're surrounded by photographers and journalists.
So
and
it was a media thing.
Yeah, and Hamilton's just got his arm, like, on Alonso's shoulder. It's a bit friendly.
Haven't seen this reported anywhere else.
No.
Looks interesting.
Especially with all the reports that, you know, they still hate each other.
Yes.
Maybe they don't.
Wonder what's going on. Well, yeah, but there's so many media there. It's not like they genuinely like each other and they've gone to the pub together, is it? They've all met to have their photograph taken of their arms around each other.
It's a bit of a setup then. I suppose now it's time to look back at our voicemail predictions and just laugh at everyone that got it wrong. We did have one from Stephen, which actually missed the montage, but we'll play it now.
Hi, this is Stephen from St. Louis, Missouri in the United States. And my prediction for the Australian Grand Prix are Kimi Raikkonen first and Lewis Hamilton second and Heikki Kovalainen third.
Every single person, including you and me, had Raikkonen.
Nobody expected him to be out of position like he was. Did anybody else get anywhere near close?
A lot of people chose Hamilton.
Yes.
So a lot of people got that right. I thought Poppy's predictions were interesting because she'd chosen Rosberg. A
lot of faith in that guy.
Yeah. I chose Heidfeld.
Wow.
Quite impressive. You chose Sato.
Hey, if any race that could have happened, it could have happened in that one. I could have been right.
Yeah, but it didn't.
But it might have done.
But it didn't.
But all the races... No.
No.
Never mind.
So once again, thank you to everyone that called in with their predictions. We'll probably do this again later in the year, and we might even be able to rustle up some prizes.
That's easy to say now when nobody got it right.
Housekeeping. Last week, we said we were going to post a schedule of upcoming shows, and we have done that now.
Yes, and last week you were confused. You didn't know what was going on. Are you any the wiser now?
I think I am, but if I ever forget, the schedule is there for me to see.
Perfect. Did you like what we did this week?
There was a lot of shows.
But we managed it. It wasn't the end of the world. It wasn't that tough, actually.
That's easy for you to say.
You did all the talking.
Yeah.
Well, I enjoyed listening to them. We would like your feedback, though. If you call any of the F1 Digest shows, do let us know whether you liked it, whether you think we can do anything better, whether or not you'll be checking it out in future weeks.
One of the things I think made the F1 Digest show is the live comments.
Yes, that went well.
What happened was, on the blog, Lou said it'd be really good if there was a place we could live comment. So we set up a thread and we live commented.
I think it really enhanced the F1 Digest shows. Everybody's comments really gave us a good benchmark of what happened and what people's thoughts were going on during the race. And I think it was better for it.
And it made the race really interesting as well, to see what other people were thinking.
It did. Are we going to do it next race?
Absolutely.
I think we should.
So if you want to get involved with F1 Digest, or you just want a place to hang out and chat during the race weekend, come along to sidepodcast.com, where we tend to open a thread about half an hour before free practice 1, 2, 3, qualifying, the race, basically any time.
So we're just on the internet. We're just plugged in all the time now.
Yeah.
Any time of a race weekend, come along and catch up and see what's going on and be part of the show.
I think it made Lou's day because she said, wow, I love Side Podcast. You make a suggestion and in less than 5 minutes, it's up.
That's a mission statement right
there. That's what we do.
That's what we do. Give us a suggestion. Less than 5 minutes, we're up and running with it.
So I think that's it for this week. A very hectic weekend and there's no time to rest because it all starts again on Thursday.
Really, really looking forward to the next one.
Definitely.
I'm going to be back on Saturday.
Yep.
Which might become Sunday.
Yep.
And this is Sunday.
It's Sunday today.
But the show is Saturday and Sunday.
Yeah, you know, like we did this weekend. So. Saturday, Sunday. Sunday, Saturday, yeah.